Willkommen bei Remote Leadership, der zweiten Staffel des Chief of Anything Podcasts von und mit Michael Portz und Christian Kohlhoff. Für alle, die auf Entfernung führen oder arbeiten und dabei noch mehr erreichen wollen.
Hallo Stephen.
Hi Christian, hi Michael, how are we?
Pretty good. Hey Stephen, good to see you. Hi Cristiano.
Hi, how are we really today? Hello Stephen, good to see you. So who are you and what do you do?
My name is Stephen. I'm from Dublin in Ireland, which is the center of the known universe. I'm lucky enough to know you two guys through EO Ireland. So I'm one of the founding members of EO Ireland and I'm the current chapter president. My business for many years was in the English language business, in the English language industry. So we had an English language school in Dublin where we taught international students from over 50 countries around the world how to improve their international communication skills. My last day in that business was just before COVID hit, the same day as COVID was announced. So it's been, I've been called everything from an evil genius to stuff that's far less complimentary since I exited that business. The business I run is all about personality profiling, doing career guidance for individuals, doing selection for companies, and helping people get onto the right track for them.
So that sounds like congratulations first for selling your business, and that sounds
it was a long hard road. But yes, thank you.
We know, Michael. Yes. So that sounds like you just started a new business the day after COVID hit, or how did that work?
No, so I've grown up in family businesses. So my whole life has been about being involved in family businesses. So the language school I bought from my parents probably 12 years ago now, and then this other business, which is a much smaller business, I bought 4 or 5 years ago when I lived in, I took a year out. And lived in Spain, and that's when I decided I spent a lot of time in figuring out that I wanted to sell one business and take over the other business. Mm-hmm. So the personality profiling business has been around for a bit longer than the language school business, but now it feeds a different part of my why and really fulfills me in a different way now that I probably wouldn't have been able to enjoy in my 20s and 30s because it didn't have the same level of travel and meeting new people. Whereas now it really fills a more individualistic part of what I want to do with my life.
Mm-hmm. So what's your why? Would you like to share it?
So yeah, absolutely. So this actually came, so 5 years ago, my wife and I, we went to live in Spain for a year. My wife is Spanish and it was something we always said we wanted to do when we had kids. We wanted them to understand both sides of the culture. So we were lucky enough to, she's a teacher in Ireland. She was able to take a career break for a year. And I had 2 years of run up to be able to run the business remotely, to run the school remotely and put a lot of things in place. So I ran the language school from Spain. And while I was there, I had a lot of free time because I had no interruptions from phone calls and people coming in and the normal day to day of a normal physical office when people are in the office and you get distracted and pulled in different directions. It was a really interesting experience for me. And then that's when I spent a lot of time working on the Simon Sinek stuff and going through the start with why and going through all of these things. And I have a couple of EO mentors and I would work through some of these ideas with them. There were a couple of iterations, but I ended up with two words which encompass my why, which is aspire and empower. So I want to spend all of my time helping people to aspire to a better life and a better career and then empower them to get there. And that's all I want to do. So all when I look at my myriad of ideas, because we're all entrepreneurs, we see something and we go, I can do better than that. Or, oh, wouldn't it be
shiny
great if we
did this? Syndrome.
And it's just insane. So when I look at it through the lens of aspire and empower, it's very clear. I have a real short list of things now that I want to do and I want to work on. And that's what I want to spend my time and energy on.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Stephen. So you said you already led a company remotely, so pre-COVID. So what were your thoughts when all the others were fuzzing around remote leadership and doing home office?
Well, So funny enough, so when I was leading remotely before, so most of my experience in EO, for example, is the staff teams and the membership teams, they're all over the world. So you don't get to meet on a regular basis in person, maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, if you're lucky and you meet at different events. So I had a bit of experience of spending time on Zoom calls before everybody was on Zoom calls and spending time getting to know really what you need to do to make it a bit more personal, to spend a bit of time before meeting, a little bit of small talk, not just ticking a box to go, okay, well, we've built rapport, now move on to the next thing. So I had a little bit of experience with that. The other part, when I was living in Spain, I was the remote person and I was the leader of the organization. So it wasn't, everybody else was still physically in the building together. Everyone else was still, because we had classes in person in Dublin. So the teachers were there, the students had come. It would have been very hard to sell the idea to students to come from Germany to Dublin and your teacher is going to be remote living in Germany. So it's not going to work. So everybody had to physically be in the building. But I was away. So I had to build ways. That's when we really went in on Google Docs, for example, instead of using the old like server-based system that we had in the school for a long time. I had to build, make sure that I had access to all of the documentation with VPNs and everything else, which was pretty common, but not very common in our industry. And then having these weekly meetings and having scheduled weekly meetings, because we sell blocks of a week. So I'd have one-to-one meetings every day with different people at different times, more ad hoc. But there was one day a week on Wednesday at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock Spanish time, and that was the scheduled meeting. So we were halfway through the week when we had students, because we sold blocks of a week to students rather than days or months. So we said, right, well, midweek, if something's going wrong, we have time to correct it, or if there's something that we need to be aware of before the end of the week. It's also Monday and Friday were the two craziest days with the intake and the outtakes. So Wednesday was the best day that we decided we would do this.
But let me just make sure I understand this correctly. So what you're describing now, Stephen, is this is pre-COVID, yeah? So you were working remotely out of Spain, running a company in Dublin that had students come into your school, academy, whatever you call it. And so the way you managed
the world is what I used to call it.
Say it again.
The best English language school in the world is what I called it. But I was.
Oh, I like the sound of that. I love the sound of that. Yeah, I know these guys who are building the number one leadership academy on earth. So that's another story. So students are coming physically into a building and the other team's there and you're sitting there all remotely. And how did that work for you and how did it work for your team and for students? So what was the learning out of that before we come to what happened after Corona hit?
So for the students, so I used to travel quite a bit for work anyway. So I would spend about a week, a month out of the country anyway, trying to find students, going to marketing and networking events and going to these different promotional events. So I had built it in a way that I didn't interact with the students on a daily basis anyway, because I wasn't always there. So if somebody came for a week, they might not meet me. If somebody came for 6 months, they'd meet me loads of times and be in the canteen and everything else. But so the students didn't really mind. The students didn't notice that I was gone. With the team, we already had we had WhatsApp groups, we had emails, we had Zoom. So I came across Zoom through EO, and that's when I instilled it in the company, because people were using Skype and Skype just wasn't that reliable, especially for group conversations. And it used to be extraordinarily expensive on the phone, ringing back from Japan for an update at 2 o'clock in the morning. And they're going, oh, something's wrong. I'm jet lagged. What do you want? Putting those things in place made the communication much easier. So some of it was synchronous, some of it was asynchronous. So some of it was just a recorded message or a quick video and sent, because I might have been, or somebody might have been in a completely different time zone. So you don't want to wake them up and then screw up their day. But for the team, because we had fairly clear objectives, we knew the framework for the teaching. We knew the framework that we wanted. We had a 12-week plan in the school for every class that repeated every 12 weeks. So we had a system in place that didn't require daily input. So we had the system that kind of ticked over and people knew their role and their cog in each part of it.
Yeah. Okay.
But just as you say, so I used to have these schedules when I lived in Spain, when I was remote in Spain, I had weekly meetings because we sold a week. And it was a different thing. It was more of a leadership touch point, a formal touch point, as well as the informal stuff.
Mm.
Since COVID, we now have in this team, it's a much smaller team, but we have daily huddles every day at 10 o'clock. That's more so for their well-being, for as a personal touch point to make sure that everybody's still talking. Because some people are living alone, some people have family who are older, some people are not living in their own country. So part of it is, a lot of it really was a mental health touch point as well, to make sure to see how everyone's doing. And if I could pick up on something, then I'd have another call with that person and check in with them, see how they're doing. See, not much you can do. You can't go give them a hug or you can't go have a beer with them, but at least you're checking up on them and they know that. Yeah. There is some light at the end of the tunnel. And as the leader, especially in a COVID scenario when everybody's kind of looking to you for some kind of reassurance, that's why we did the daily huddles.
Hey, I'm curious. Can I ask you a question? I realize
I'm on your podcast. I'm here.
But I want to check because I know that you sold the greatest English language school in the world. Yes. Just before COVID happened, did you follow what happened when COVID struck and what happened then and how did the business deal with that and how did they deal with the remote situation that was put on them?
Yes. So we actually, because of a lot of our experience with remote working, we had been spending about 2 years or 3 years building in online learning as a core part of our framework. So we were using Google Classroom in the physical classroom. So all of our teachers knew how to do this and people were already getting notes and resources and everything if they were sick or if they were out.
Yeah.
So when the government shut down all the schools in Ireland and said you have to teach remote, in all of the British Isles, and I say this with a certain sense of pride because I was involved much earlier, but I genuinely believe that of all of the schools in the British Isles, the UK, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, we were probably the number one school that just switched over. Not we anymore. Yeah. It was like 4 months after I left. But the team that was there were able to switch over and it was seamless. And the students had classes. The teachers were used to being on camera. They were used to having microphones. Some more than others, from what I imagine, some of the teachers adapted to it much quicker. But they did an awful lot with the online stuff. They didn't maximize it to what I think that a language school could have maximized it to. They weren't then selling internationally and going, well, okay, you're stuck in Brazil, you're stuck in Spain, you're stuck in Russia, whatever. Why not join our classes and learn English so you're not wasting your time?
Yeah.
I felt that they probably could have done a lot more of that.
Turned it more into an opportunity than just a situation to deal with.
Yeah. Whereas I think the mindset for a lot of the language schools in Ireland was like, okay, this is only going to be a couple of months and then we're back to the normal. We don't have to invest in all this stuff. Whereas
that was a popular mindset around the world at the time.
Yeah.
And it still is.
Well, at this stage, hopefully it will be finished in a couple of weeks time, a couple of months time for Europe anyway.
And there was something that I noted from the very beginning when our conversation started, and you mentioned that you do personality profiling.
Yes.
What's your take on what type of personalities are dealing with the remote situation better than others? Or if I ask it the other way around, what do I need to accommodate for to suit for the different personality styles to make sure everybody has a chance to be happy in this remote led world?
So there are a couple of things that I, at the very beginning of this, I saw a funny meme, which was introverts. You've had a hard time over the last couple of years in offices, but please check in on your extrovert friends. Yes. They're not enjoying the lockdown.
I love that.
And people not having that. I think it varies. And I've been having this conversation a lot with people about how we as humans, how we've all changed. So in the Republic of Ireland, things are still kind of locked down. So the indoor dining is not open. The pubs are not open if you don't have food. You can only be outdoors in Ireland.
Yeah.
The weather is not as reliable enough to be constantly outside. But if you go over the border to Northern Ireland, that's part of the UK, everything is open. People are not really wearing masks. And when Irish people go over the border, there is this weird sense of, oh, this is wrong. And it's going to actually take us a little bit of time to get used to actually going back to the freedoms that we had that we never realized that they were freedoms because we could go and we could go into a restaurant and we could have something to eat.
We took them for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've become kind of institutionalized to this idea because there was especially a year ago, this time last year, when nobody really knew what COVID was. We just knew that there was this thing hanging out there that could get us at any point. And we all changed our habits. We all changed our routines. And it's going to take a little bit of time to get us back to that. And actually, I think the younger people, I have a teenage daughter. She's 14, and I think she's missed out on a huge amount of stuff, interacting with friends, being able to go to discos, being able to just meet her friends in the shopping mall and things like that. So I think young people are really going to need a lot more guidance than we would have probably given to 16, 17-year-olds. I think they're going to have to learn a little bit more the interactivity. But I also think that people like networkers, strong networkers, people who get their energy. So if you talk about a Myers-Briggs or a Jungian type, so the EN, so the E rather than the I, I think a lot of them have also become institutionalized. They've kind of gone, okay, well, I can't meet people. And their energy has gone down and they've internalized a lot of that. It's going to take a little bit of time for them to get back up. Some people will click back into it. But I think there are some people that are going to need, you might have marketeers, for example, who were really strong marketeers and really engaging and going out to all these networking events. And they might actually take a little bit of time to get revved up again because their whole engine needs to be restarted.
So if I'm a manager now and I have a team, say, of 10 people, and so how can I work with that? So how can I look for the signs, how the different type of people get along in the situation, how they cope, and where do I need to pay attention to make sure the team stays healthy, happy, and successful?
Well, if you have an idea, if you know what people were like before COVID, if you have an idea of, okay, well, this person was outgoing, or this person was process orientated, or detail orientated, or this person was always the idea generator. Yeah. If they've started being a lot less of that, like whatever their strengths were, if they're a lot less. So when we talk about personality, we have every scale is our day-to-day. So we have a number of scales where people have different scores, and that's where they are on a day-to-day basis. If you have a temporary change, so if you're in a moment of high pressure, or if you're in an environment that really pressurizes you, let's say you're a very cooperative person, but you start working in a highly competitive organization, you go into a state for the temporary time that you're in that organization. But the longer you spend in that state, the more that becomes your personality. So the more you move along that scale. So with COVID, if we have people who are really outgoing and they're starting to get really stir crazy for the first month when they can't meet people, but then the next month they start to get less stir crazy and the next month less stir crazy. They're spending so much time in that state that their habits and their personality, their behavior is starting to change. So really what we want to see is, where were people coming into the pandemic? Where were people a year and a half ago when we were having normal conversations? Where are they now? And really, how's their energy? Because if they're in this new state and they're still upbeat and energetic, then okay, maybe they can find different ways. And you might find that they serve different roles now in the organization. So they might attack their work in a different way, which might be fine for you. But if we need to get them back to where they were, we need to have conversations about how they dealt with the pandemic, how they're feeling about it, and what are the routines that we can offer them. Whether we can say, okay, do you know what? Let's send you on a junket first. So before we send you out to some big networking thing where you're going to be bringing in business, let's just send you to a conference. That doesn't matter. Just get back into the rhythm of it. Or send ourselves to the conference.
Funny story. I was on an airplane last week for the first time in 1 year.
Well, exactly. I remember them.
Exactly. And I used to be on them all the time. I was flying around. I was traveling 150 days a year. And I went to the airport with apprehensive feelings. You know, I had mastered the art of air travel. You know, I was one of those super efficient guys with the smallest suitcase and everything in gear. And I knew all the shortcuts and I was whizzing through.
Did you used Did you used to get angry at the people who had water or something in their bag or took too long to take their laptop out?
Anymore,
I did.
But, yeah.
I hated those people.
Well, if I'm honest,
did you not read the signs? Is this your first time on a plane?
Well, I used to get angry, and then I became a professional coach, and I started to learn to deal with my own triggers. And now I claim that I don't get angry anymore, but we'll talk about the truth later. So, I was apprehensive going to the airport and going through it all. And in the end, and I did forget a few things, you know, there was stuff when I forgot to pack so and so. I didn't bring the power adapter, stuff that it would have never happened. So I had this experience of doing something again that I was really good at and making mistakes. I wasn't on the same level. So what you're saying is then we're going to get a lot more of that when everybody goes back. And by the way, what is back?
Well, when we go to whatever we get to. So, I mean, when I say back, I really mean back to the freedoms, not necessarily the way that we did them. But so for me, so when I talk about personality, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not smart enough to be a psychologist. I just am able to talk about stuff. And from a completely lay point of view, from a non-academic point of view, our personality is simply a collection of our predictable behaviors. If we say that somebody behaves in a certain way, that's their personality. And again, from a very basic point of view, our personalities are made from our beliefs, our habits, and our perspectives. So we can change those three things, which changes our behavior, which changes our personality. So the habits are the really important ones. So you mentioned there, you forgot the habits of this. So your personality is not a frequent flyer at the moment. Because you forgot, what's the routine and what's that? Oh God, I forgot that thing. Yeah. And then you start to feel, Jesus, am I forgetting everything? What's going on? But it's just that routine has gotten broken. Those triggers and those habit loops have gotten broken.
So where is it all going to go? What's the ideal outcome of this for you? What's the future?
For me, remote
leadership future, you know, in that sense of, yeah.
So we moved office in the middle of the pandemic. Because the office was in my family home, and we've decided that we're going to split the two. And so we moved the office. And we had a big conversation about this because I firmly believe that except for one or two elements of our business where we provide books and tests, so we actually distribute for a couple of distributors, we don't need to be in the office 5 days a week. I think a lot of the people, so the whole staff are coming in today. We're doing a training thing today on our new software. And I wanted everyone to come in, and we're going to go try and go for lunch or something like that just to see. But for me, it doesn't make sense to have people 9 to 5 in the office all the time. Now, that's a mindset shift from looking at the inputs to looking at the outputs. And I think it's really important for companies. And we were able to do that years ago and that's like what we need is for the students to accomplish this. Your style and your style are going to be very different, but they need to be able to discuss the past perfect. They need to be able to discuss an idea, things like this. So we had objectives and the teachers all worked towards that. So I think I was lucky in that we always kind of looked at the outcomes as opposed to the inputs. But I think there's a lot of friends of mine that are tracking, you need to make 100 calls a day.
Yeah.
Why do I need to make 100 calls a day? Well, you need to do like 10 sales. So you need to make 100 calls. Well, why don't I just make 20 good calls and convert half of them? Oh, it doesn't work like that. It can if you let the people who are good at what they're doing do it. So I think there's an element of that allowing people to actually bring their own strengths to it and just looking after the outcomes.
Mm. I love that concept of looking at the output rather than the input. Yeah, it's good. Nice way to summarize it. Thanks for that.
Stephen, when you talked about leading your school from Spain, you said it's important to make it personal via Zoom. And now you said, okay, people are different. They have, in one sense, changing personality types over the time. So how do you manage to make it personal as a leader from Spain? To anywhere in the world.
When I was doing the weekly calls, that was less, when I was in Spain, that was less about making it personal because we had these interactions through the week. Now in the pandemic is when I think I was trying to make it a lot more personal and discussing like the Netflix shows or what people like, how people's families were getting on, and trying to engage that the same as you would have at the water cooler. I've had a lot of conversations with fellow trainers and coaches, people in EO who do some of the training. We've moved everything online. And one of the things that we've really said that we miss is the little conversations, even if it's just getting a coffee at the same time or walking to the elevator at the end of the day, and that little connection and that little switch, because we jump onto a call. We go, right, here's the agenda, what we're going to do. Okay, thanks, everybody. See you next week. And we don't have those serendipitous little moments where we're talking about, did you see that Tiger King or the Star Wars series or the whatever? And having that little connection that reminds us that we're all actually people. We're not like 2D robots that are talking to each other. We're here as a group of people trying to accomplish something. So what is that thing that we're trying to accomplish? What is the ultimate BHAG, the 10, 20 year goal, or what is even the quarterly goal? Because we're people doing this, and we want the best part of people at work, but we also want the best part of people at home. We don't want to just have them burnt out at work and then not having something outside of work. We want to have that balance. We want them to be fulfilled. So as they're coming to work feeling, I want to be here, not I have to be here to support my kid's school or whatever. So having that, I think, is really, really important. And I think that's a culture that we've built, because I've grown up in family businesses. So there is no there's no delineation between work life and family life, because it's all the same. I met my wife through work. So there is no blurred. And for the entrepreneurs, that's one thing. But for the employees and for our teammates, I think it's something that we need to make sure that we're actually helping them with.
On a real tactical level, what's your behavior to improve this, making it personal? So what do you do to make this happen?
For the daily huddles, for example, we do the daily huddle only for 15 minutes, and it's the update of what's happening during the day. But really, on the Monday and on the Wednesdays, 5-10 minutes of that is, so what's happened? What did you do on the weekend? What did you get up to on the weekend? Did you go for a walk? Did you do this? And actually sacrificing some of the strategic time, because in my head it's like, look, if there's something else I need to follow up with somebody on to go, okay, remember, we're working on this today, or you need to have this done by the end of the day, I can follow up on that on a one-to-one very quick on a quick 2-second call on WhatsApp. But actually having the team sharing, oh, what's the documentary you saw? Oh, I didn't see that. Okay, I'll put that on my list. And actually having that shared experience, I found that, and I think my team found that beneficial. To actually sacrifice some of the strategic time and allocate that, for want of a better term, like a less clinical term, but actually allocating that to team development. And I think people appreciated that.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. So in your new business, what you learned about remote leadership and about yourself, what will you do differently in the future? And
well, actually, one of the things, so we spent a lot of time, we've developed a new program for career guidance for high school students, and we developed that with everybody working from home. So we were on shared Google Docs, we had impromptu calls and our daily huddles, we had meetings on a regular basis to make sure that we all knew what we were looking at and what was being done. And then I was working with the developers. So actually, once we all finished on the core part of it, I was working with the developers for probably about 6 months in total to make sure that the user journey was right and all the stuff that needed to be done was done. And then I made sure that I was the main point of contact for any questions from any of our clients. So I was doing demo calls and tech support calls all the time for about 6 weeks once we went live. And once I had it nailed down, because then I wanted to see what the interface was like to get the developers to tweak this or to change that flow so it's more user-friendly, so there's less calls about that. And now today, that's when I'm training all the staff how they can all now do this, so we can all do the tech support and we can all do the onboarding for the clients. But they don't have to be here. They're here because I want to connect with everybody again, but they don't have to be here to actually be doing that. So they can be working from home. They can be in a different place. I have one colleague who's from Croatia, so she's flying home. She has to quarantine for 10 days, I think, when she gets home, even with the negative PCR. And she did this last year as well to see her family. So we just said, okay, well, look, you're going to be working from home, whether that's Dublin or Croatia, doesn't bother me. So fly home, get a midweek ticket because it'll be cheaper. Well, that was my thinking. There's nobody on flights, so all the flights are cheap at the moment. But so go work from home, work from the hotel or wherever you are. We can do the Zoom calls, we can do everything else, and then have your holiday for 2 weeks. And then when you come back and you need to quarantine for a week, you work from home. So it doesn't really bother me where stuff is done from, except when we need to ship stuff. And that's the only reason that we have this, that we bought the office, is to have the distribution center, but also we have a training studio, a training room upstairs, so we can do in-person training for Irish people. But we've laid it out in such a way. So I know, Michael, I took a huge inspiration from your desk setup when you were starting all of this. And have so I have the lights, the second screen, you're going to show me something there? So the lights, the second screen. I don't have multi-camera because I'm really just doing prescribed training programs at the moment. But the idea is to actually build up our own series of training programs on career guidance, on interview skills, on things like this, to be able to help people improve their lot. So that room, when we, the main reason we got it, it's basically an open space. So we can put what we want in it. And I've built it in a way that it can be a training room. And within 20 minutes, it can be a studio. So I can kind of just put a couple of tripods and platforms and do it.
Cool. Hey, Stephen, I'm still intrigued by something that you said a little earlier. And it was this idea of when the environment changes around us, then slowly but surely we adapt to that and we change so that we can fit in and succeed and deal with that. I'm paraphrasing. I think that's roughly what it was. The question I have is this. So, or it's two questions packaged into one. So the question is, how was that for you personally? How did you change? And what was your key learning about yourself through all of these changes over the past year and a half?
Interesting question. So about... about a month and a half into the pandemic, we have a big dog, which gave us the excuse to make sure that we all as a family got out of the house for an hour once a day to go for a big long walk, which was really beneficial. There were some people that were, because they were getting trapped in that spiral. And I know myself, if I didn't have the dog looking at me going, I'm gonna pee on the carpet if you don't bring me out. So I had to bring him out. But I know myself that I was starting to get into that bit of a spiral because I'm such an extrovert. Like I love being around people. I love finding out about different things. I love talking to people. I mean, we've met in various corners of the world at different events for a long time.
With hundreds of people around us.
Yes. And it's funny. So, and again, as I said, remember at the beginning when we all had this fear of, there's something out there. It's everywhere. It's on the roads. It's you can't touch it. Like there was just this unknown entity of fear, like a classic horror movie or a thriller movie. And I remember one day we stopped. The dog was talking. Was messing with another dog, playing with another dog, and we started talking to the owners of the other dog. And my wife said to me afterwards, we were only talking for about 10, 15 minutes. And I was in my whole, so what do you do? And what do you normally do? And this and that and chatting to them. And my wife said, my God, your mood has changed so much just because you met other people. So it's one of the things that I found is I really needed to connect with people. I really needed to be able to have these, even if it's 2D and even if it's just reaching out and chatting with people on an informal basis, I needed that. But at the same time, I've found I'm a little bit more process orientated now because my personality, not process driven at all in any way, shape or form. Every single number two that I've ever had has to be process driven. Otherwise, whatever we're working on will be on fire, literally and figuratively, because process is not my thing. But I've actually found through this, because I'm not as distracted by going and talking to people, I can actually go, okay, well, I need to do this. Case in point, so I don't know if this is a video or if the podcast is video or not, but this is a new flowchart. So I'm holding up a picture, wow, a printout of a flowchart, which so I would
if
never
you're listening, Stephen is holding up something that looks very structured, very organized. It's color-coded, looks like a flowchart, looks very technical. Impressive.
Yeah, and it only took me about 6 months. No, I'm kidding. But it's figuring out, and I think some of it, there's a part of me that really thinks that dealing with the developers as well, because it had to be quite technical and going through every step by step. If I had tried to do that a year ago, it probably would have been a hot mess. Whereas now, after a year of actually going, okay, I can work on this and I can follow this process and I can lay out this process and coming back to it, it was a much easier time for me and probably the developers, because I would have driven them insane.
Can I take a learning out of that in the sense of people can change?
Absolutely. So, and this is what we talk about. So when I do personality profiling workshops, this is it. Your personality is just your predictable behaviors. And if you change your behaviors, you change your personality. Mm. And by changing the behaviors, it's changing your beliefs, changing your habits, or changing your perspectives. Yeah. Those three things are hard. There was an evolutionary psychological reason why those things are good for us and why as human beings we need them. Biases are another thing. We all have biases. We have to. It's how our brains work. But not questioning those biases is what gets us into trouble. So when we take those biases and we go, we need to figure out how we're looking at the world, then we can take our perspectives, we can change our habits. The example that I use, let's say you go to a networking event and you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
If you walk into the room, you look around, you don't know anybody, you subconsciously take a step back. Then you take another step back and you end up at the wall. And then you take out your phone. And then you start looking at your phone, which puts a barrier between you and the people. And then you think, you know what? They're not very friendly here. I'm going to go. If you go to your next networking event, and instead of taking a step back, you force yourself to change your habit loop. The trigger is the same, but you change your habit loop and you step forward and you start talking to people. The first five or six times you do that, you will feel like an idiot. You will feel completely awkward. You won't know what to say and you'll stumble and you'll feel like a fool. But if you do it more than five or six times, it'll start to become more natural. It'll start to become better. And then you will start to go to networking events, start talking to people, start being more confident. And if somebody sees you then a year later, they will say, he's an extrovert, not an introvert.
Fantastic. You know what's dawning on me just now? I can do the same thing remote. So if I'm in a Zoom call with 50 people, I don't know them, and I'm with my back against the wall, and I decide I'm going to get out of that Zoom call, I could just chat to somebody.
Yep.
Be it on a chat channel or go in a breakout room or just talk out in the open in front of 50 people. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a decision that we make. Or you could do what I do, which is just say something controversial and let people start a conversation.
Yes. Christian loves that. He's smiling. Look at him.
that's how I make the Zoom calls enjoyable, just by chatting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you very much, Stephen. So as a present for you, for having talked to us, so I have this magic wand here in my hand. And I swing this magic wand, and then you can send a message to all the leaders out there. What would that message be?
What would that message be? I think knowing your personality, spend some time getting to know your personality. What are your strengths? What are your, I'm not going to say weaknesses, but areas that you're not as strong in. And if you want to develop them, develop them. If you don't, hire somebody that does what you can't. Because knowing who you are is the best way of developing yourself, because you know where you're starting from.
Word.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.
Guys, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. It's delightful to talk to you.
Have a nice day. See you soon, too, guys. Hopefully in person.
Cheers.
And the next event with hundreds of people around us, and we'll be chatting and moving forward.
On a plane.
See you there.
Goodbye. Bye.
Das war Remote Leadership. ein Podcast der Coa Academy mit Michael Porz und Christian Kohlhof. Unser Programm und weitere Informationen findest du unter coa.academy.